Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us on this bonus episode of Pop Kitchen. We wanted to do a little episode to correlate. Correlate?
I think collate.
No, collate.
Collate.
And what's the word? Congregate.
No.
Consummate.
No.
Anyway.
Consolidate.
Consolidate. That was the one. All of your correspondence relating to June Part 2, both because so many of you have seen it and enjoyed it and have thoughts to say on it. Plus, I was away for a little bit, so we pre-recorded a couple of episodes. But nevertheless, we wanted to keep talking about June Part 2 because so many of you have enjoyed the June Part 2 content. We are going to talk... some of these emails do have plot spoilers in
them. Yes, assume spoilers.
Our numbered episodes are always spoiler-free, and the bonus episodes are sometimes do have spoilers, and we will always tell you if those have spoilers. So just be wary. If you have not seen June Part 2 yet, please go and listen to our spoiler-free review. Go and see the film and then come back to this at a later date.
Shall we begin, James, with Zachary? Zachary writes in, or Zach actually, as you sign off, but your email says Zachary. Yep. Zach says, hello, James. Hello, George.
Hello.
Been binging your episodes over the last few months as I've been training for a half marathon, and I absolutely love the pod. So keep up the good work. Thank you, Zach. Although now I'm sad to say I have to wait for episodes once a week. Just got back from watching June Part 2, and I must say, damn good stuff, sir. Mm. That's a nice Inglourious Basterds reference there. Yes. I followed your advice, George, and watched Part 1 last night in preparation, and it was definitely needed.
Nice.
Speaking to my friends afterwards, they had all been slightly confused as they hadn't watched Part 1 in a while, but nevertheless enjoyed it as well. Austin Butler is brilliant in playing a character type I've never seen him play, that of an alopeciac sociopath, and that black and white sequence took my breath away. Florence Pugh was also great, as were all the other performances. Yeah. A fitting end to the film. The very much bittersweet ending of revenge over the Harkonnens completed, and yet now whipped up to the Fremen into a jihad, I believe I'm using that right, of destruction against the other great houses as the Holy War starts is excellent. I really enjoyed myself. Again, keep up the good work. Kind regards, Zach.
It was we said this before, but it doesn't feel like a definitive ending to the Dune story. Like you really do feel like there's more to tell, yes. There's more stuff to happen.
But I do also feel like, I don't know.
The book has been closed on that.
Yes. But I agree.
I totally see the potential.
It's like season one is over.
Yeah.
And they're teasing season two.
It's not like the ending of Return of the King where the story is done.
No.
Several times.
Yes, many times.
This next one is from David. And David, you have a phenomenal last name, which I won't say, but thank you. Hi guys, and greetings from sunny Winchester. You may remember us from such film shoots as Les Mis and The Da Vinci Code. I don't know what that means, but that's great.
Winchester has been used as a location film Les Mis.
But I don't know what sort of... I can't in place the Da Vinci Code scenes in my house as to where that would be. I have to start with a confession. I've never seen or heard of any of your pods prior to Friday, the 1st of March. I've been to see June 2 at the IMAX Leicester Square with my movie club pal and was searching for something to help me make sense of what I'd just witnessed. My two questions I have for you both, brackets, I hope you don't mind, it's two. Figure the name and scale of the film might get me a pass.
Sure.
One. What do you both think of Chalamet? Undoubtedly an amazing actor and seemingly has the Midas touch. However, I fundamentally struggle to fully empathize with him like I may have done with a Luke, Neo, Frodo. And I think that's like the other like hero's journey, epic fantasy sci-fi films. Wondered if that resonated. Are we supposed to not like him 100%, do you think?
Yes, you're not meant to like him 100%. You're meant to feel conflicted about Paul. You're meant to be, he's an anti-hero. He's becoming an anti-hero. He's gone from a hero, being an earnest, well-meaning character. Mm. And then he's been, in taking up this mantle that's been forced upon him, he then is tainting himself, becoming an anti-hero. And I think that's fine. I know some people who are a bit more reserved on Chalamet. And I do think there are certain, in the scene where he has to be like, I'm Paul Atreides, Duke of Arrakis.
It's quite like impetulant and impatient.
Yes. And it's a bit like, slightly theatre kid vibes. But I've always thought going into some films, am I going to tire of Chalamet? Every time I see him, he actually always delivers.
He's very talented. So. And I've seen him do the other side, like the quiet, more sort of intimate version of him, and that's also very good. I do stand by what I said. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. He should take a break because he's released like three films a year. Him, Sidney Sweeney, and Zendaya are probably just a bit too much everywhere.
You know he's going to be on the Oscar run next year.
He's doing
the Bob Dylan film, A Complete Unknown is what it's called. So Bob Dylan, musical biopic about a huge figure, directed by James Mangold, who's a huge director and played by a big actor. So we'll be getting that, unless the film tanks, but he'll probably be on the Oscar circuit.
But in terms of like fully empathize with him, I made a comment about him being a little bit of a Mary Sue and maybe not having the most stakes, and I'm not necessarily worrying if he's going to achieve what he sets out to do in that film. But all in all, I still think it works and I still think he's a very, very talented actor. Question number two. Did I miss the point of making Lady Jessica the daughter of the Baron? Seemed to not add any stakes to the film, really. I understand it would have been in the book, but it was kind of a bit of so what? I adore the film and will be tuning in regularly from here on. Thanks. David.
Yes, I do. I do get that to a point. I don't think it would have materially made much difference had that not been revealed, but I think it adds to his sense of like, oh my God, this is pure destiny. Mm. We are so inextricably linked with our enemies and our prophecy. Mm. So
I kind of left it thinking there are so many little nuggets I would want to explore further.
Yes.
Like I talked about the Austin Butler's whole dynamic with his training and be poisoning other people, the insufficiencies he felt. There's lots of things I'd be like, oh, more of that.
Also, actually, in the first part one, they talk about how the Bene Gesserit have been trying to bring forth a Quidditch Haderach by crossing bloodlines extensively.
Yeah,
so I think by realizing that his mother is the daughter of the Baron, a powerful person, is even more evidence that this is kind of fate.
It's like how the fact that Rey is a Palpatine, but explored.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then he also says, P.S. Andy Serkis was behind us in the popcorn queue, which was surreal and awesome in equal measures. Oh, that's really cool.
I love Andy Serkis.
I love a bit of Andy Serkis. Good in everything, Serkis.
Thank you. Oh, hang on. David, you sign off with is it your work email? Or you just refer to yourself as creative director. It's a title I love, but off what? Hmm. This next email is from Peter, who says, hey guys, hope you're having a perfectly pleasant day. Just listened to your June episode and totally agree that it was a true cinematic event with some of the best cinematography and sound design I've ever experienced. Much like George, I tend not to give things a 5 out of 5 rating on first viewing, but felt while still on the screening that June Part 2 is going to be a rare breaker of this trend.
Yeah.
Until that is, the last two scenes. Mm-hmm. The Holy War Begins line / Great Houses not accepting Paul as Emperor, as well as Chani leaving for the desert on her own, left me with a bit of a similar feeling to the end of June Part 1. I remember you guys saying similar back in 2021 that it felt like this story was not wrapped up, but with Part 2, you've now spent hours building towards a conclusion, but this time it was supposed to be the end, but we're still very much in the middle of a larger story and conflict. This has really frustrated me in the 2 days since seeing it, and one is 99% one of the best films I've ever seen, and the more I think of the story, I feel a lack of a full completed arc. I know it's a big universe with more story to come, but I really think it would be great to have some sort of conclusion here, as with the book, where June Messiah is blah, 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 blah. I'm just skipping over some plot details of June Messiah. Anyway, I just wondered if you felt the ending wasn't quite as conclusive as it could have been, or if you were totally happy with the ending and that it wrapped up the story somewhat. Thanks, love the pod. Peter, we've basically already answered that. I think it does conclude, but it also leads up. It's kind of a bow. So I didn't feel shortchanged. I was like, oh, mission completed, revenge against the Harkonnens completed, throne taken, completed, Arrakis secured, completed, and now the next bit.
It feels like Denis Villeneuve with June 1 and 2 is offering something for the viewer very different to just the story on paper. I really feel like he's trying to elevate it beyond the nuts and bolts.
Translation,
and create something that's really distinct and powerful and impactful, combined with the best cinematography and design. It feels like he wants to jump off the page, jump off the novel, create a piece of cinema that is a different conversation to just, the story went this way.
Because
the story, as what I said, is like, what happens is he says what he's going to do and he eventually kind of does it. But that's not what this film does.
Also,
it makes it special.
Sorry, all the prophecies are always telling you like, this is what's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
And
you need to ask yourself in 2024 with all the other media we have, how interesting is the concept of a prophecy when it exists in Harry Potter and Star Wars and so many other things?
But that's why it's interesting that he's an anti-hero. Because that's what apparently June Messiah explores is the kind of weight of being a messianic figure, the problem of a messianic figure.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Ryan writes in and says, hi guys, it's Ryan from Malaysia again. Hey. I'm writing this while listening to the episode where you read my email about Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window.
Yes.
Thank you so much for reading it. It made my day. Anyway, June part two. My brother and I went to see the film in an IMAX theater on the first showing of the day at 10:30 a.m. Before the film began, the trailer was played. My brother, who saw June Part 1 the night previously on Netflix for the first time and thought June Part 1 was ass, said June Part 2 would be better because there were explosions. Even though I disagree... Is it before the film the trailer was played?
That's crazy.
That does happen.
That really shouldn't happen.
Thought Dune Part 2 would be better because there were explosions. Even though I disagree with his comment on Dune Part 1, I can say he was right about Dune Part 2. It was better. Part 2 is definitely funnier than Part 1. I agree. I don't really remember much humor from Part 1.
No. There are explosions in Part 1, though.
There are. I can say he was right about you. Every time Javier Bardem utters "as written" under his breath, the entire room bursts into laughter. That was the same with our screening. The ending left a bitter taste in my mouth because I think Timothy Chalamet's character did Zendaya dirty by asking Florence Pugh to be his wife. Dance with the girl that brought you, Tim.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? For 90% of the film, I was by his side, and by the end, I loathed Chalamet's character and sided with Zendaya. I think you're meant to feel that. I think.
Yeah.
Paul is acting under obligation of like uniting these houses, and it's like sort of you should marry this person to bring people together. But obviously, the crazy sand lady is the one who's really got his heart.
And Channy represents the Paul he really is.
Yes. But
he's having to kill that side of himself,
crying in the desert.
Yeah.
As the score rises,
now having to assume the role of being the person he thinks he should be.
Yeah, he's got obligations.
Yeah,
I think you should meant to feel like that. As soon as he started acting like Anakin Skywalker, I could predict what the next film was going to be about. I can't wait another 2 years. You'll be waiting more than 2 years to find out.
Sorry, I'm saying five.
Five plus.
Really?
It depends on what Denis Villeneuve does next. Because if it's like a new IP with all that design, that takes years to sort of establish. And who knows what he's going to do. And I will buy the book, but it will be based on because I heard Timothy Chalamet say he is currently reading Dune Messiah. If the story is depressing, then I will watch Dune 3 in a bad mood on the biggest screen possible. I hope to hear this email read soon. Your favorite listener from Malaysia, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan. This next email is from Luca, who says, hi guys, Italian fan writing
nice.
I don't think we've had Italian writing before.
I don't think we have, you know.
Molto bene.
Luca.
I've been following your pod for a long time now, and I love it.
Thank you.
I spent so much money going to the movies because of your reviews.
Oh, great.
Do you hear that, James? We're saving cinema.
We're saving cinema.
Single-handedly.
Cinema brands come forth. Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to share my thoughts about a movie that you guys loved that left me underwhelmed. Mm. Dune Part 2. I liked it, don't get me wrong, but it felt like a 2.5-hour long trailer. To me, it seemed like one big scenographic segment after the other. They didn't run smoothly. It was like a series of short films. Moreover, the structure was peculiar. Every scene had a little climax, but the movie, in the end, almost didn't have a big one. Didn't have a big climax? Are you joking?
That was a pretty big climax.
Three giant sandworms and nuclear war.
It was a climax. I do have to disagree. Anyway, I climaxed.
And then he uses a graphic term to... I mean, you're... I'm not going to read that out, but I do see your point. But anyway, I understand that Villeneuve has to do a third one, but come on, not everything can be a build-up. Freaking deliver already. I mean, I do think the film delivers hard.
Even not in towards the end, there are like moments that deliver in the film.
Yeah.
Like him riding the sandworm is an incredible moment that delivers.
I'd say that's prime next day delivery.
The action scene with Zendaya and the sort of helicopter under the bits all delivered. That was fun.
Anyway, and...
Austin Butler's entire sequence was delivering like action and spectacle, and it was... visually compelling.
Luca, I disagree, but you do say please read this email. It was my birthday yesterday, and it would be very rude not to.
Happy birthday, Luca, for whenever you're boosting.
Sorry.
This next one is from John, who says, hello, George and James, James and George. I'm a recent convert to the show, having discovered you in the wilds of Instagram Reels.
I absolutely
love the show, and I've been listening to the back catalogue for weeks, although I still have a lot to go. I'm far from the level of the double and triple listeners. Yeah, I forgot about them.
If you're on a triple listen, I really do salute you.
Are they cycling through? Still, are they on their like fourth or fifth? Because it's getting longer now to start back and go all the way to the modern day.
Do you know, I think that's what's going to happen with me with like Friends, because I watch Friends to go to sleep. It's like a medicinal service now. It's just a
loop.
I could even watch it on mute if I needed to. It's just like the and I'm wondering, that's when I'm gonna get so deep into that media, I'm gonna watch that show more than anyone has ever watched it.
And if that's what's going to happen with this.
I'll meet one of these people who'll be like, in episode 14, you said very carefully, blah, blah, blah.
And yeah, you
like,
had a cup placed in this particular position. Was that to reference us to the Antichrist?
Yeah. Now for my controversial opinion. I think that Dune is incomplete at best and a failure at worst.
Whoa.
Obviously, the production itself is incredible. Cinematography, sound design, costumes, everything is stunning. It feels like not one single person involved ever used the phrase, well, that's good enough. My problem, this is inherited from the book, is with how it explores its theme of be wary of charismatic leaders. I think that the movie made one smart departure from the book by making Charney critical of Paul's rise to demagoguery, but then it undercut that choice almost immediately with an ending that makes her objections seem more romantic than moral. I also think that the savagery of the Harkonnens was wildly overplayed and obfuscated any reading of Paul as a dangerous figure. I understand the point that just opposing evil does not necessarily make one good, but for me, Villeneuve played it on the wrong side of subtle. All that being said, talk to me again after Dune Messiah gets made, and maybe I'll be eating my words, but for right now, I have to base my opinion on what there is, not what there might be. Once again, love and appreciate the show. Thank you from a fan. Best, John in Ontario, Canada.
Interesting. On the Zendaya, the point about Chani being like, her decision is based on romance and not morals. I disagree. You're shown throughout the film that Chani has deep ideological principles for which she expresses emotionally. Mm. They are principles that make her angry, they're principles that make her upset. And I think what you're seeing at the end is, yes, she is romantically bruised by Paul's decision, but it is so interlinked with her ideological principles that that is why she is affronted as well. So I read it as an emotional expression of a deeper thing, of a terror. And
you know what it could have maybe benefited from? Like giving more context to the ancient rivalry over hundreds of thousands of years.
Yes.
Like show me a cut back to what's happened between these people. Explain more of it. Because we're told they've been fighting for years. Yeah. We see the armies, very sort of like Star Wars-esque, lined up in a row. Mm. Show me more. Give me more context as to what they've done to each other and why they've hated each other. I'm sure it's all there.
But also, isn't it funny with like a film that gives you a lot.
Yep.
Give me a bit more.
More.
I'm actually underserved in this area.
A bit more, please.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John, for your opinions as always.
This next email is from Sam, friend of the show, Sam, who says, "Hi, James and George. I hope you're both well. Last time I got in touch was about Anatomy of Fall and All of Us Strangers, and I've just today found out that I've got a broken knee.
Oh, no.
So I'll have much time on my hands." Say it while yawning, James.
Yeah, sorry.
Sounds like you care.
Boring.
So I'll have a lot of time on my hands to catch up on all the movies and TV I need to see. Last week, my girlfriend got us tickets to go and watch Dune 2 at the IMAX. I was very grateful for this opportunity, as this was clearly how the film was meant to be seen. And like most people, I was blown away. Blown away!
All caps.
Not knowing the original story, this kept everything as a surprise throughout the film. And I thought the acting and especially the battle scenes for me were particularly breathtaking. I'd rather not say anything else at the risk of spoilers, but just go and see it. I do have one question. And I know you answered a question similar about films to watch after a breakup, but recommendations to watch with a broken leg. Rear Window. Perfect. As always, lads, thanks so much for your weekly conversations and looking forward to many more reviews.
127
hours. 127
hours
and Rear Window. There you go. Done.
Is there another one? No. The Revenant. He's been carried through and he's like injured.
Sure.
Make you appreciate it. I'm glad I didn't Google how Dune ended, and I'm not going to Google Dune Messiah unless I commit to reading the books. And I'm quite happy to just enjoy the cinema experience, feel the plot as it is. This last one is from Robin, who brings a lot of sort of specific bullet points about what parts of the film you liked or didn't like.
Yes,
Robin goes, "Hello, James and George. Love your pod as usual. Look forward to them every week. Listened to the one on Dune 2 recently and thought to share some thoughts I had. Brackets, spoilers in some. Love the bit where Paul stabs his psycho cousin as his cousin stabs him. A callback to Dune. Where his mentor does the same in a practice fight with Paul."
Oh yeah, with Gurney thinking. Also, I love the way you've written this, Robin. It's like you're texting a friend about some gossip. Like,
yeah.
I love the bit where Paul stabs his psycho cousin.
This is how I texted people when Game of Thrones ended in group chats. It's like, how could this, what was going on with that?
Yeah,
interesting how Charney never cries, even as Paul literally proposes to someone else in front of her and the entire nation. A true Fremen, as they say, while Paul lets loose before heading south. Yeah, can't get rid of the tears.
She's got to save that moisture.
Moisture, yeah. Javier Bardem would like just fucking lick it up and drink it.
Yeah.
It was a great movie, but was it a really good sci-fi movie?
Yes.
There are too many plot holes in the lore or lazy world building where you just have to accept stuff just because.
I know what you mean by that.
I'm sorry, Robin. I really
disagree. I think it's one of the, probably one of the, I think it's, I was talking to my brother about this. It is probably science fiction at its best on screen. It really is up there.
He goes on to say, you bring on lots of sub-bullet points, which I can't read all of these, but you go on to later say, I liked how the movie didn't follow the usual formula for a movie. There's a lack of a clear ending point, and you never really know what the end game is or what the ending is supposed to be. Again, I feel like the story of that conflict and retaking Arakeen is closed. It's more that like we can move on to a different world, yeah, and these people are all still around, yeah, and it can be further explored. Power shifts. The constant power struggles and shifting dynamics are fascinating. Yes, In the beginning, we are introduced to the Harkonnens, who absolutely obliterated the Atreides. But then you see them bowing to the Sardaukar, and being at their beck and call, who later acts so powerless to Paul. Also, love how the power dynamics between Paul, Paul's mum, and the Bene Gesserit Reverend Mother completely flip at the end. Real satisfying.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Bene Gesserit. Bene Gesserit.
Dumb.
Anyway,
I love Zendaya, but something about her acting really takes me out of it. Sometimes I couldn't help but see Rue from Euphoria instead of Shani. She seems to be acting them the same. Again, I just disagree.
Robin, I think you're being quite harsh.
I think you're being a little bit harsh. I think Rue is Zendaya's best character for me.
Totally.
Like, oh my God.
A character, because you could play 20 episodes.
Especially in season two, which is a weaker season of Euphoria. Yeah. But there's,
do you think?
Season two is a weaker season,
yeah,
than season one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought we both thought that. Maybe it's the 2%.
2%. Yeah.
I thought season two sort of wandered away a bit. Yeah. Thanks to the movie, I've been using the voice randomly when I ask people for things. Hand me the gravy.
Hand me the gravy.
And love how Stilgar just goes, "Let's have a gabe," every chance he gets.
Yeah.
And then you put some memes in the email as well.
Yeah, you do something well. It's like,
sorry I couldn't read everything, Robin, just the interest of time. But you said, sorry for the terribly long email. Wishing you both the best. As always, looking forward to the next episode. Robin, thank you so much. And thank you to everyone.
Thank you, everyone,
for sending in your thoughts. I hope you enjoyed this little extra bonus digestif.
No, I was just going to say, you are a bright bunch, and we always love hearing your thoughts about stuff. And it, you know, the joy of films are to discuss them and engage them, and we love hearing your thoughts on
those. I do like disagreeing with people. I find it more fun.
Yes. We sit here and we go, I don't think that.
I think you're wrong.
The film ended perfectly.
But regardless, it's good to hear what people are taking and interpreting differently.
The people think.
What the people.
Power to the people.
Send your thoughts, your questions, your concerns, your emails in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. We'll read them out on a future episode. Don't forget, we post new episodes of this show every single Wednesday.
And do not forget to follow us, as you probably already do, on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, especially YouTube, actually. Many of you probably have YouTube accounts and you haven't thought about subscribing. Go and subscribe. It'd be great.
Hit the bell. If you're watching on YouTube, hit
notify
the notification bell when we post.
Yeah.
You're straight in.
We are posting stuff on socials that we haven't posted on the main channel, you know, film bites, little short clips like that, and any events, cool events we go to.
More fun things.
It's great. So, and also, if an episode is delayed, which it won't be in the future ever again, but if it is, we would put an announcement on there. Have a great week, guys. See you next week for the main episode.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.